Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Jesus and the Pharisees right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural law when they put, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts," into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10. But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took our silver coin out of circulation. And in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills, and clad coinage in place of our silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our Mosaic Law School. It's conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Then click onto the archives page and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Then go to the archives page and you can download it. Hey, have you ever read in the Bible about Jesus and the Pharisees? He seems to have had a running battle with this group of people called Pharisees. And I was looking in John chapter 8 the other day, and I noticed that Jesus had a couple of statements here that he made. In verse 37, he said this. He said, "I know that you are Abraham's seed, but you seek to kill me, because my word has no place in you." And then in verse 40, he said the same thing. He says, "But now you seek to kill me, a man that has told you the truth, which I have heard of God, and that this did not Abraham." Now, that's twice he said of these people. He said, "Hey, what's with this? Why are you trying to kill me?" Was he paranoid? Was he suffering from delusions? I mean, these were religious people. Religious people don't run around killing people, do they? Well, you know, leaving aside the Catholics killing the Protestants and the Catholics and the Protestants killing each other in Ireland and all of the sectarian war that's gone on. In fact, you know, if you stop and think about it for a minute, can you point to a war that didn't have some kind of religious overtone to it? You know, even World War II was being fought by the Japanese Empire and their rising sun. See, they're sun worshippers. And their flag has this big red star on it, you know, this big red glob in the middle of it. World War One was being fought between Christian Americans and Christian Germans in Christian France, aided by Christian Englishmen over there. I mean, it was kind of a slugfest among friends, wasn't it? We don't tend to think of it like that, you know, but here's this German soldier. He's going out into the battlefield here to kill Englishmen and Frenchmen and Belgians and anybody else, and he's a Christian. I mean, they're all belong to the same church. Hell, they belong to the Lutheran Church or the Catholic Church. Now, Jesus was a religious person. He's credited with being the founder of Christianity. And he went around talking to people on biblical topics quite often. When you pick up the Bible in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you find red letters that ascribe to him his statements. And he tells people, you know, like in Matthew 19:16, for instance, a guy was talking to him one day. Just to give you some credentials here about Jesus and his religion and so on. He said in verse 16, "Behold, one came to him and said, 'Good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life?'" That's not a question that you ask of a truck driver, you know. You know, if you're working in a truck stop, you know, you don't walk up to the window of the truck driver and say, "What good thing may I do, sir, that I may have eternal life?" You ask him, what do you want today? You want number one or number two diesel? You know, you want your truck washed? You want me to check the oil for you? You know, you look at somebody, you know, that's talking about going to heaven or something, you know, as being religious. Well, Jesus answered him in the same vein. He said, "Well, why do you call me good? There's none good but one, that's God. But if you will enter into life, keep the commandments." And so he's talking about the Ten Commandments. And this guy wanted to make sure that he was talking about the Ten Commandments, and so he said, "Which?" And Jesus said, "Well, you shall do no murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, and honor your father and mother." Well, those five of the Ten Commandments cited over here in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. So we'd have to give Jesus credit for being a religious fellow and a religious teacher now, wouldn't we? Now, there were some other people that he had a lot of dealings with called Pharisees. Now, these Pharisees were religious. Paul, the apostle, you know, the apostle Paul, the guy that wrote these, I don't know, it's 14, 16 books here, or letters, you know, epistles they're called here in the New Testament. He wrote a bunch of paper, you know, like the book of Hebrews and Romans and 1st and 2nd Corinthians and Galatians and Ephesians and so on. Yeah, he wrote a lot. Well, this guy, Paul, said that he was a Pharisee. He identified himself with the Pharisees. And so here's Jesus, you know, sometime later. He called one of the Pharisees, a guy by the name of Paul, to be one of his disciples, one of his apostles. Isn't that kind of strange? Well, not really. If you think about it for a moment, it would be like Jesus coming down and talking to a rabbi and saying, "Hey, rabbi, come on over here. I'm not satisfied with your religious philosophy. I want to teach and train you to change horses here in the middle of the stream. I'm going to turn you into a Christian." Now, that's just unheard of among Jews. Jews hate Jesus, you know, like Muslims hate Jews. There's just this animosity between these two groups of people. So I looked up this word Pharisee, and I found it 86 times in the scripture. Pharisee, singular, 11 times, and Pharisees, plural, 86 times. So that's 86, 96, that's 97 times. And there's another group of people in here called Sadducees. Jesus had trouble with the Pharisees and the Sadducees all the time. And these Sadducees, they're mentioned 14 times, and so I looked it up. If you wanted to look it up in Strong's, it's number 4523, that's Sadducees. And then Pharisees is number 5330 in Strong's, if you want to look it up and get a definition. Well, it tells you that they're separatists, they're religious, and they're exclusively religious. That is, the Pharisees are. And the Sadducees was what they called a sect. These Sadducees, they had a little difference of opinion. They were Jews. They subscribed to the Jewish religion, Jewish philosophies, except they had a couple of three little differences, kind of like Christians, you know, they have little differences among them. The main body of Christians we call Catholic, of which there's about a billion of them, about a billion Catholics in the world. And then there's a bunch of other guys that they call Protestants. Protestants, they're guys that don't agree with Catholicism. They've got some little differences. And there's about 300 million of those. So total, there's about 1.3 billion Christians in the world. And then they're fighting among themselves constantly. Muslims, you know, you got the Shias, and then you got the Sunnis. I don't know if there's any. And then in Saudi Arabia, they got something else, starts with a W. I don't know if they're Wahhabis or something like that, but you know, the Muslims are kind of broke up. They got a little difference of opinion. You know, they're all Muslims, but they're a little difference of opinion. And these differences of opinion cause a lot of hate and discontent, and they want to kill each other. The Protestants and the Catholics are constantly trying to kill each other. Or at least they have been in the past. You know, here in the United States, we're not having nearly that kind of problem, but over in Ireland they did until recently, and the British and the Irish and the Catholics and the Protestants, and they've been fighting for thousands of years. So looking here at Judaism, I discovered that there's a bunch of these Jews. Let me give you a list of them over here. Jews are divided up just like Muslims are and just like Christians are, and there's about, you know, 12 or 13, 14 different groups over here. We look at Jews, there's religious Jews, Jews that are Orthodox, and so we call those Orthodox Jews, and they're at odds with these other groups of Jews over here too. You know, they don't necessarily believe in or practice what some other group does. We have Messianic Jews. Those are Christian Jews, in case you didn't know that. Christian Jews. Sounds kind of like an oxymoron, but I don't know what the numbers are. I can't break this down for you and tell you that, you know, the Orthodox are so many. But the total that I've discovered in the world for these Orthodox Jews or the Khazar Jews and so on is about 20 million worldwide, 5 million in New York and about 3 or 4 million over in Palestine. The rest of them scattered around the world. There's not a whole lot of them. Not a whole lot of them. And this thing of Jew and Pharisee kind of go together. Let me read you a quotation here. It came from a book here called Who is Esau Edom? And so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give you some citations from the Jews. I don't want you to think I'm anti-Semitic here now. So if you're a Jew, I don't want you to get mad at me. I'm going to take this right out of your books, just like I do with Catholics. You know, when I want to find out what Catholics believe, I go to the Catholic Encyclopedia. I go to the Catholic Church. I like to get Catholicism right out of the mouth of Catholics. And if I want to talk about Mormons, I like to get the words right out of Mormons. And hey, what do you Mormons believe? What do you practice? What do you teach? And that way, you don't accuse me of, you know, it's hard to accuse me of being anti-Mormon if I'm citing right from Brigham Young. This is what Brigham said. This is what we do in politics. What we like to do is we like to catch the words right out of your mouth. And these Pharisees were good at that. They were constantly trying to catch words out of Jesus' mouth. I'll read some of those to you as we progress along. And I'll show you the antagonism between Jesus and the Pharisees. They never had good words for each other. Jesus never had a good word for a banker, money changer, lawyer, Pharisee, scribe, Sadducee, preacher, not a one. If you can find a good word in the Bible, one good word for a banker, money changer, lawyer, Pharisee, scribe, Sadducee, or a preacher, send it in, would you? Let's put it on the air and spread it around. So now, you know, if you're in one of those professions like a banker, a lawyer, you know, a preacher, you know, you might want to think about that for a minute, because when you come up in the judgment and Jesus says, "Oh, Bob, what'd you do for a living?" "Oh, I was a lawyer." "A lawyer? You? Or I was a preacher." You know, you might be at a disadvantage there working against somebody, you know, maybe who was a carpenter, plumber, or an electrician. Jesus had a neat statement. I gotta tell you this. He was talking to the Pharisees one day, and I think it's in about Matthew, where is it here? 20, 21, 22, something like that. And he said that the publicans and the harlots would enter into the kingdom of heaven before they did. Can you believe that? Let's see, it's in Matthew 21:31. Let me see if I can find that. Yeah, I was amazed when I saw that, too. I said, wow, you know, you got a whore out here on Times Square in New York City, and he says, those whores are going to enter into the kingdom of heaven before you preachers do. Let's see if I can find that. 21:31. I think I've got it marked here somewhere. Am I right? Yeah. He says, whether of them twain did the will of his father? And they said unto him, well, the first. And Jesus said to them, well, truly I say unto you, that the publicans and the harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. isn't that amazing? Now, he's talking to religious guys. How would you like to tell your preacher, you know, next Sunday when you get through and the preacher's standing at the front door, you know, of the church, and he's greeting people as they go out, and you're shaking his hand, and you look him right in the eyeball and you say, Pastor, the publicans and the harlots, the truck drivers and the longshoremen and the whores in Times Square will enter into the kingdom of heaven before you. Boy, that'd be a hell of a statement, wouldn't it? He made another statement over here in Matthew 5 about verse 20. Let me read you this. He's talking to these same Pharisees again. Now, today we would call Jesus anti-Semitic. These are highly inflammatory. But I didn't write them, so don't get mad at me. So I'm just going to cite it right from Jesus. He's free, white, and 21. He can speak for himself, and he did. These are his words. He says, for I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. So whatever it is that you Christians are looking for out there, or you Jews, or Muslims, or, you know, whoever you are, whatever it is that you're looking for in the way of reward, what am I going to get? 70 virgins? You know, am I going to get to go to heaven? Am I going to get rulership over the earth, or whatever it is? So whatever it is you want to get, here's Jesus. He comes along and says, except your righteousness, that is your good works, your actions, your deeds, exceeds that of Jerry Falwell, Oral Roberts, and Billy Graham, you will in no case. I mean, you got to be better than these sky pilots and holy Joes. Now, you think about that for a minute. I mean, he's not comparing you and saying your righteousness has to exceed the longshoremen and the truck drivers, who in our society over here are looked upon as being publicans. I mean, they're about the dregs of the dregs, aren't they? I mean, you know, a truck driver? I mean, isn't that guy a sinner above all? A longshoreman? A sailor, maybe, you know, with tattoos all over him, you know, and visiting the whorehouses, you know, of Shanghai and Manila. I mean, these are people that are obvious sinners. And they don't make any bones about it. No, he doesn't compare. This is Jesus now. He's not comparing you with people that are obvious sinners. I mean, guys that are out here, you know, just tearing up the town on Friday night. He's comparing you to the most righteous people that God ever put breath into. You know, Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and Jerry Falwell. Maybe Jim Baker and Tammy Faye and a couple others. And he says, except your righteousness. I mean, if you can't live a life better than that, You can put your head between your knees and kiss your ass goodbye. So, you know, when I read these statements here in the scripture, you know, it kind of jogs my mind a little bit, and I say, wow, look at that. Now, take a look at these various and sundry Jews. I said I'd look these up for you. About 12 of them here. We have a group of people called Khazar Jews. You know, they're people, like in Christianity, we call these Baptist Christians. We call them Methodist Christians, Presbyterian Christians. So there's Khazars. There's proselyte Jews. You know, Sammy Davis was a proselyte. Sammy Davis was a black man, a Negro. Black man, black American. And he converted to Judaism. You know, well, people do that all the time, you know. They convert to Catholicism, you know. They convert to Protestantism. Americans convert to Islam, they become Muslims, you know, and probably vice versa. Anyway, moral to the story is here is you got proselytes, people that belong to other groups, and then they want to join one of these groups. There's two other groups here called the Zeraline and Pharisline Jews. There's two more. I belong to one of these groups over here, the Zeraline. That has to do with being born. It's like being born a Pole, you know. Like being born a German, you know, you were born, you know, a Japanese or Asiatic or something like that. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, it's just you're stuck with it for all of your life. You know, I don't know that it's hell. I never had any big problems, but I looked up my genealogy one day and went back into time through the British Israel Society and said, oh my God. And when you do that, you're going to be amazed because you're going to get tied in to some very famous people in the olden days. I mean, really, really badass people. I mean, you look back in my genealogy, and I don't even want to tell you that I was descended from that creep. But that's the way it is. You know, we can't change that. The Pharaoh's line, Queen Elizabeth comes from the Pharaoh's line of Judah. Did you know that? Did you know that Queen Elizabeth was a Jew? She was. I mean, she still is. I mean, she will always be. There's nothing she's ever going to do. And there's a group over there in England that's called the British Israel Society. Write this down. You want to check me out. British Israel Society. Number one, Buckingham Gate, London. Okay? And they keep track of the genealogy of all the royal families of Europe and have from Charlemagne forward. They can trace Queen Elizabeth's genealogy back to Adam and Eve. And so can I. I can trace my genealogy back to Adam and Eve. And so can you. I mean, if you know how. I'm not here to sell genealogy. I just wanted to tell you that there was a bitch going on between Jesus and the Pharisees. And I thought, wow, what a story. Jesus was anti-Semitic. So was Benjamin Franklin. I mean, Benjamin Franklin and George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, they all had something to say about these Pharisees. Yeah, they did. And I'm going to read some of it to you. I'll take it right out of the horse's mouth. I'll read it right out of Ben Franklin's mouth. Here's what he had to say. I think you're going to be amazed here. There's a group here I mentioned earlier called Messianic Jews. Messianics. And the Orthodox Jews, these are the guys that go to synagogue every day. I had a company controller. His name was Milton Kagan. Hell of a nice guy. Hell of a nice guy. In fact, he saved my company is what he did. I was in hot water with the bank, and I was bankrupt and upside down. And this guy came in and taught me how to count. I was just an ordinary, everyday garden variety Joe Sixpack. Christian, couldn't count. Never went to public school. That was my big problem. And he came in, he said, well, let me show you how to count here, Mr. Gordon, how to put your ledger and your journal together over here. Let me explain to you that when you go into the business world, we have to buy it for a dollar and sell it for two. You've been buying it for two and selling it for one. And every time you make those transactions, you lose a dollar. And so that's bad for business. And so he said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to turn around. We're going to buy it for a dollar. And we're going to sell it for two. And then we got a dollar left over. See, that's called profit. That's called profit. And so he did that, and he did a great job. He did a great job and made a convert out of me. Now, I didn't convert to Judaism, but I converted to business is what I did. And that was old Milton. He was an Orthodox Jew, went to synagogue just about every Sabbath, and he, hell of a nice guy. Reformed. Here's another group over here called Reformed Jews. Evidently, they became bad, and then they reformed themselves and became good guys. We have people called Black Jews. It's almost like being called Shanty Irish. Black Jews. Then there's a group called Ashkenazi. That's an odd name, Ashkenazi. And then there's a reciprocal here called Sephardic. Sephardic Jews and Ashkenazi Jews. And you can have racial Jews, people that are racially. And then the opposite to that are these proselyte Jews. See, Sammy Davis was not a racial Jew. He was a convert, a proselyte Jew. And then we have a group here called Edomite Jews. Edomites. E-D-O-M-I-T, Edomites. And then finally we have this group here called Khazar Jews. And there's a fellow by the name of Arthur Koestler. Let me give you a name and number here for a book. Called the 13th Tribe. This guy's a Jew, Arthur Koestler. K-O-E-S-T-L-E-R. The startling new discovery about the true ancestry of the Jewish people, and it's going to cause quite a stir. And on the back page here, this book traces the history of the ancient Khazar Empire, a major but almost forgotten power in Eastern Europe, which in the Dark Ages became converted to Judaism. Khazaria, K-H-A-Z-A-R-I-A, Khazaria was finally wiped out by the forces of Genghis Khan in the 12th century. But evidence indicates that the Khazars themselves migrated to Poland and formed the cradle of Western Jewry today. In the general, or to the general reader, the Khazars, who flourished from the 7th to the 11th century, may seem infinitely remote today, but they have a close and unexpected bearing on our world, which emerges as Mr. Koestler recounts the fascinating history of the ancient Khazar Empire. A major but almost forgotten power in Western Europe at about the same time that Charlemagne was emperor in the West. The Khazars' sway extended from the Black Sea to the Caspian Sea, from the Caucasus to the Volga River, and they were instrumental in stopping the Muslim onslaught against Byzantium and the eastern jaw of the gigantic pincher movement that in the West swept across northern Africa and into Spain. Thereafter, the Khazars found themselves in a precarious position between the two major world powers, the Eastern Roman Empire in Byzantium and the triumphant followers of Muhammad. As Mr. Koestler points out, the Khazars were the third world of their day, and they chose a surprising method of resisting both the Western pressure to become Christian and the Eastern pressure to adopt Islam. Rejecting both, they converted to Judaism. In the second part of this book, The Heritage, Mr. Koestler postulates and speculates about the ultimate faith of the Khazars and their impact on the racial composition and the social heritage of modern Jewry today. And he produces a large body of meticulously detailed research in support of a theory that sounds all the more convincing for the restraint with which it is advanced. And yet, should this theory be confirmed, the term anti-Semitism would become void of meaning, since, as Mr. Koestler writes, it's based on the misapprehension shared by both the killers and their victims. The story of the Khazar Empire, as it slowly emerges from the past, begins to look like the most cruel hoax which history has ever perpetrated. And it is a fascinating story. That's the back fly cover. Now, here's the book. Let's see if you can find one of these. First copyrighted back in 1976 by Arthur Koestler. And it was manufactured in the United States. Koestler was born back in 1905. The book is entitled The 13th Tribe. Arthur Koestler is spelled K-O-E-S-T-L-E-R. I would guess that you could probably find this in Barnes & Noble. I can't see any reason why not. 1976. Now, of course, if you can't find it there, you may have to go to our source, you know, the underground bookstore over in Austin, Texas. I'm trying to find a publisher here, and I don't find one. I got a Library of Congress number on here. Kostler, Arthur. Bunch of numbers on here. 1976. Well, go with what you got there. Take it to a used bookstore. Kostler, the 13th Tribe. Plug it in. You'll find a copy somewhere in the world. And let me look in the back here and see if there's something. Arthur Kostler was born in 1905 in Budapest, Hungary. And though he studied science and psychology in Vienna at the age of 20, he became a foreign correspondent, and he worked for various Eastern European newspapers. And he also worked in the Middle East, Paris, Berlin, Russia, and Spain. During the Spanish Civil War, which he covered from the Republican side, he was captured and imprisoned for several months by the Nationalists. He was exchanged after international protest. In 1939 and 40, he was interned in a French detention camp. After his release, due to British government intervention, he joined the French Foreign Legion and subsequently escaped to England and joined the British Army. Like many other intellectuals in the 30s, Kostler saw in the Soviet experiment the only hope and alternative to fascism. He became a member of the Communist Party in 1931. But he left the Communist Party in disillusionment during the Moscow purges in 1938. His earliest books were mainly concerned with these experiences, either in autobiographical form or in essays or political novels. Among the latter, Darkness at Noon has been translated into 33 languages. After World War II, Mr. Kostler became a British citizen, and all of his books since 1940 have been written in English. He now lives in London, but he frequently lectures at American universities and was a fellow at the Center for Advanced Study in the Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University in 1964 and 65. In 1968, Mr. Kostler received the Sonning Prize at the University of Copenhagen for his contributions to European culture. He's also a commander of the Order of the British Empire, as well as one of the 10 Companions of Literature, elected by the Royal Society of Literature. His works are now being republished in a collected editorial of 20 volumes. I think you'll find the book fascinating. Doesn't seem to be a publisher on here in any, you know, like Bantam Books or something like that. I got $6 on this one here. My guess is that I bought this used in a used bookstore for $6. Oh, here, look at this. Emissary Publications. Post Office Box 642, South Pasadena, California, 91030. Specializing in eye-opening books on history, economics, politics, and secret societals, or secret societies. Write for a free catalog. Let me give you the telephone number. Let's see if it's any good. I mean, it may or may not be. But try 818-794-3400. Again, 818-794-3400. $3,400, called Emissary Publications. Now let me have you write down a second one here. Try Brave New Bookstore in Austin, Texas. We'll open your eyeballs here. Brave New Bookstore, 512-480-2503. Don't tell them George sent you, but, you know, write to them, call them. Or get them online, bravenewbookstore.com. bravenewbookstore.com. Tell me you're looking for the 13th Tribe author, Arthur Kostler. That's an odd spelling of his name. It's K-O-E-S-T-L-E-R. K-O-E-S-T-L-E-R. All right. Now with that much out of the way, let me get back over here to Jesus and the Pharisees, because he had a lot to say about these Pharisees. He called them extortionists. He said they were serpents and vipers, whited sepulchers, blind guides, fools, blind hypocrites. He called them a generation of vipers, an evil and adulterous generation. He said, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees," in Matthew 23. Ravening and wickedness, he said they were filled with. He called these people everything but white. Ultimately, they got their revenge on him. They killed him. You probably heard about Jesus being crucified on the cross. And the people that did this, the people that were the leaders in this, were called Pharisees. They weren't the only people that were complicit, but the Pharisees took charge and they took the lead. So there was this tremendous animosity between Jesus and the Pharisees. Now get this. The Jewish religion today, as it is today, traces its descent without a break through all of the centuries from the Pharisees. And their leading ideas and methods found expression in a literature of enormous extent, of which a very great deal is still in existence. The Talmud is the largest and most important single member of that literature. Where did I get that? Oh, I got that from the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 8, page 474, published in 1942. So before you call me anti-Semitic, you remember that I got that from the Jewish Encyclopedia. I didn't just think that up. Listen to this again. The Jewish religion, as it is today, traces its descent without a break. That's a hell of a statement. From Jesus to 1942, without a break. Through all of the centuries from the Pharisees. Jesus never had a good word for a Pharisee. He didn't have very many good words for preachers either. Pharisees are preachers. Today we call them rabbis. Anyway, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Then click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, with that out of the way, we can get back here to Jesus and the Pharisees. Now, the Apostle Paul was a Pharisee. The Apostle Paul was a Pharisee, and you'll see that in Acts 23, verse 6, Acts 26, verse 5, and Philippians 3, verse 5. There's three places here where Paul, the Apostle, who's probably one of the most vociferous, the one that wrote the most, talked the most, and is probably better known than any of the others. Matthew wrote one book, Matthew. Mark wrote one book, Mark. Luke wrote two books, Luke and Acts. John wrote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 books. He wrote the Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John and Revelation. So he wrote quite a bit. Now, the rest of the New Testament is written by Paul, you know. Not exclusively. James wrote a book. Peter wrote a book, you know, 1st and 2nd Peter, and then there's James. And Jude wrote a letter. There's only just a few, just one letter, one little short blurb, one page. And then Paul wrote, I think it was 14 epistles. You know, Romans and 1st and 2nd Corinthians and Hebrews, you know, the big ones. And then he wrote a number of letters to 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, and Philemon, and Philippians. And so he's pretty well known. Now, he was a Jew. He said, you know, he was a Hebrew. That's what he called himself, was a Hebrew. He had connections with the Romans. He was a Roman citizen. He had a lot of connections. Mainly, though, he was a Pharisee and he was sent out. He was a prosecuting attorney. He studied law at the feet of Gamaliel. Gamaliel was a Pharisee. Gamaliel was a tutor. He was a law school tutor. He did what I do, or I do what he did. I'm a private tutor. I teach law. Gamaliel was a private tutor. He taught law. The Apostle Paul was a prosecuting attorney, and he was sent out by the Pharisees, by the authorities, to prosecute people for heresy. So, you know, the Apostle Paul was a pretty talented fellow. Very talented fellow. He was a lawyer. He was a Pharisee. He was a Hebrew. He was a Roman. Now, he wasn't a racial Jew. You know, remember we were talking about this earlier. There's a number of groups of people here that call themselves Jews. Paul was born a Benjaminite. And so if we looked at his nationality, if we wanted to call him in modern times by, you know, was he a German, a Canadian, Australian? He was a Benjaminite. He today would be from Norway. He was a Norwegian. So if you traced his genealogy out, you'd find out he today, followed it on down today, those people in Paul's time that ultimately settled in Europe settled in Norway. Today they're called Norwegians, Benjaminites. Isn't that special? And if you want to check that out, you go to Stephen Collins on the Lost Ten Tribes of Israel. The Lost Ten Tribes of Israel Found. The guy's name is Stephen Collins, and I think you can probably find his books online if you go to Collins. You can also get them from BraveNewBookstore.com. And there's a publisher on that. I don't have that book right here in front of me. I'll give it to you in a day or two. Next time I get up off my chair here, I'll pull it off the shelf. And then you can check out little things like that and find out. In fact, you'll be amazed at how you can find out where you came from. A lot of times people come to class here, and had one here, pretty novel case. And he said he was an Italian, and I looked at the guy, you know. Now, I've seen a lot of Italians, and I looked at this guy, and I said, son, you're not Italian. And he traced his genealogy back. He said he came from Tuscany, I believe it was, in Italy. And so he got curious, you know, when I said, well, you may have come from Italy. In the same way that some guy from Turkey was born in Germany and calls himself a German and travels on a German passport. But you're not a racial Italian. You're not a racial German. And so he got to looking it up and come to find out he's an Israelite who was stranded in Hannibal's army, you know, many, many hundreds of years ago, when Hannibal was defeated in Italy, in the Roman Empire. And they were taken captive, taken slave, and then, of course, from that point on, you know, his descendants would call themselves Italian. And we find people like that all over the world today. You know, you can go down in the Amazon basin, for instance, and find tribes of Indians called Indians with blonde hair and blue eyes. Well, now, those people aren't Indians. Those people are Europeans that were stranded in Brazil, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of years ago, and then, you know, today when we find them, we call them Indians. Well, they're not Indians. If you traced them out, you'd find that they're not. Many of the Indian tribes here in North America, they're European. Yeah, they're European. Now, in the West, they're Mongolian, but in the East, they're European. Now, a lot of those people are, in fact, of a race of their own, but see, just because somebody lives in India doesn't mean that he is an Indian. You know, he could be another race of person who settled in that country 100 or 500 years ago. Well, the Jews did the same thing. These people that we call Jews today are people that came from other locations. They weren't born here in the United States. Jews in New York City weren't born there 3,000 years ago. They came here. You know, just like the Gordons came here from Scotland. You know, our family, the Gordons, they weren't born here in North America. We migrated here. And there's quite a little story. We'll talk a little about that as we progress along. Ben Franklin had something to say about the Jews coming to North America. And he stood right up in the Congress of the United States, in the Constitutional Convention in 1787, Ben Franklin. And like Jesus, who had something to say about the Jews and the Pharisees of his day. Now, not all Jews are Pharisees, and not all Pharisees are Jews, so let's understand something here. Not all Californians, you know, or not all Americans are Californians, but all Californians are Americans. Well, not all Jews are Khazars. Not all Jews are Pharisees. Not all Jews are Orthodox or Messianic. And not all of them are racial. Many of them are proselytes. These Khazars, for instance, they're not descended from Judah. So when we look in the Bible, we think in terms of, well, there's a guy named Judah, and he was one of the patriarchs that was born from Jacob Israel. And so Jews today are the descendants of Jacob Israel. And that's true. That's true. Those are called racial Jews. Racial Jews. But Sammy Davis Jr., now a black African, is called a Jew. He was a proselyte. He came into Judaism as a religious proselyte. The Apostle Paul was called a Jew. He subscribed to the Jewish religion. He subscribed to Judaism, but he was a Norwegian. Oftentimes people will say, well, Moses was a Jew. Moses was not a Jew. He was a Levite. Came from the tribe of Levi. oftentimes people today are shocked, they're surprised, you know, when you say, well, that guy is not a German, he's a Turk. In France today, there are a lot of French people carrying French passports that came from Algeria. Well, their political status is French, but their racial status is still Algerian, North African. All right, so let's think about that in pragmatic terms now. Not everybody that says he's a Jew is descended from Judah. Not everyone that calls himself a Jew today is necessarily a member of all of these groups. Remember, we've got Khazars, proselytes, Pharisees line, Zero line, racial Jews, Edomite Jews, Ashkenazi, Sephardic, Messianic, Orthodox, and Reformed. I mean, those people, many of them, come from all kinds of different backgrounds. Some of them are white, some of them are black, some of them are Asiatic. Did you know you have Asiatic Jews? People in Japan that have converted to Judaism are called Jews. They're Jews with slant eyes. I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee. So you may be a religious Jew, like Sammy Davis or like a Japanese, but you're not descended from Judah. So as we progress along, I think we'll make some comments about that. Now, there are some people here descended from the Edomites. They're called Edomite Jews. And these Edomites are a very, very politically active people in the world today. And they're called Jews. Now, I'm not an Edomite Jew, but I'm a Zero Line Jew. And let me tell you how many Jews there are in the world. The people in Scotland are descended from Judah. Many of the people in England are descended from or come from the same lineage called the Pharisees line that are descended from King David, such as Queen Elizabeth. And all of you royal families, all of you royal people, all of the royalty of Europe are descended from King David. Well, I say all of them, most of them. Some of them are descended from royalty that come from the other side over there called the Pharisees line. I'll put a program together here. I'll put a little story together here, and I'll show you where these guys come from. And you're going to be surprised, because a lot of you people are Jews. In fact, Judah, the Jews, in the census taken in Numbers chapter 2, were the largest tribe. There were 74,000 or 75,000 of them. Now add to that the women and the children, there was about 300,000 that came out of Egypt, and they're called Jews. But the Pharisees line of Judah that I'm descended from left Egypt before Moses. We left Egypt and went to Troy, Zaragoza, Spain, and settled in Scotland, and we're known as the... there's a name for these people up there, the guys that went into battle with naked and painted, you know, like the Indians do here in the United States. I'll think of their name here pretty shortly. So, you know, when somebody comes to you and they say, well, I'm a Jew, you know, you ought to ask the question, well, what kind? What brand? When somebody comes up and says, I'm a Christian, oh, well, what brand of Christian are you? Catholic? Protestant? Independent? Something else? Muslims come in different varieties and stripes. Now, as we talk about these Pharisees over here, remember the Pharisees now, they're a brand commonly known as Orthodox Jews today, and they use the title rabbi, and Jesus told us not to use that term, rabbi. Did you know that? Jesus said, call no man father and call no man rabbi. Call no man master. Also gave us some other instructions. We never paid much attention to Jesus. Christians don't pay much attention to Jesus. Never have, don't now, and probably never will. But just wanted to point out that just because you call yourself a Christian, you know, doesn't mean that you're following Jesus. I mean, the Creator, the Messiah. We have what we call out in Idaho Jack Mormons. Jack Mormons. Those are guys that are Mormons. You say, well, are you a Mormon? Oh, yeah, I'm a Mormon. Do you go to church? No. Do you belong to the Mormon Church? Oh, yeah. Were you baptized in the Mormon Church? Yeah, you bet. Do you believe Mormon theology? Oh, no, no. That's why I don't go to church. I don't believe in that crap. Well, you know, they came from a Mormon family. They were baptized into, and they went to Mormon church, and they have fallen away. The Mormons would say, well, they fell away from the faith. Those are people that don't subscribe to Mormon theology or Mormon philosophy. We call them Jack Mormons. Well, the Christians do the same thing, and Muslims and people all over the world in different brands and stripes, you know, and Jews aren't any different. A guy by the name of Louis Brandeis, he was a justice of the Supreme Court back in the 1940s, and he made this observation. He said, "Let us all recognize that we Jews are a distinct nationality, of which every Jew, whatever his country, whatever his station in life, or shade of belief, is necessarily a member." Louis D. Brandeis was a justice of the United States Supreme Court. And a lot of very prominent people in the world are Jews. Let me give you just some names here you'll probably recognize. Henry Kissinger used to be Secretary of State in the Nixon administration. Runs an outfit called Kissinger Associates today. Very, very prominent. He's a Jew. Sigmund Freud, you know, the great psychiatrist, a Jew. Henry Morgenthau Jr. was Secretary of the Treasury back in the Roosevelt administration. He was a Jew. Karl Marx, the founder of, the guy that's credited with being the founder of communism, was a Jew. A couple of entertainment names, Jack Benny and George Burns, a couple of very prominent theatrical comedians, both Jews. Mayor Ansel Rothschild, the guy that founded the Rothschild Bank, and is very influential in the world today. They don't call it the Rothschild Bank, you know, per se, but they're the head of things, you know, like the Federal Reserve here in the United States. That's owned by the Rothschilds. So when you reach in your wallet and you pull out a $20 bill, that's a Rothschild note. David Rockefeller, Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State in the Clinton administration, Leon Trotsky, Lenin, Dianne Feinstein, Senator, Joe Lieberman, Senator in the Congress of the United States, both Jews, Louis Brandeis, on the Supreme Court, and this new lady just been appointed to the Supreme Court, Elena Kagan, the new justice, she's also a Jew. Isn't that special? I thought you'd like that. So these are just the tip of the iceberg. These are very prominent people. Not got nothing, you know, to say bad about them one way or the other. Just wanted to point it out. Now, how many of these people here are Talmudic Jews, and how many of these people here are the kind of people that Benjamin Franklin made an observation concerning, and he said, hey, these people needed to be weeded out and kept out of the United States. Did you know that Ben Franklin said these people ought not to be admitted to the United States or given citizenship? George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and a whole host and plethora of people had something to say about that. It's called What World Famous Men Said About the Jews. Why? Why this animosity against these people called Jews? Why did Jesus have such animosity with these people called Jews, Pharisees, Sadducees, etc.? We'll answer that as we progress along, but I'm out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here in this opening program that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.